kaboom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic, a sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
In the air everywhere as we are back at it. A new weekend is upon us, and we are glad you have found your way into the podcast world. We are not restricted by the Federal Communications Commission because this is only available in the podcast format. A spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, heard five nights a week, syndicated on Fox Sports Radio through iHeart all over the United States and 165 countries and ships at sea all over the globe there because of the American Forces Network. But this podcast is an interview podcast, and we are joined this weekend. Amazingly, I thought he wasn't going to be here, but David Gascon is in the house. With his own clean sound effects as he makes his way to the microphone.
Well, I mean, I got people that are here and near and dear to my heart. You got some fanboys and bootlickers and sycophants on the overnights. So it's a perfect combination.
No. I have people that respect quality radio.
Oh,
that's
boy.
It. Oh, that's boy. It. That's all. Nothing more than that. Oh, nothing boy. More than that. Yeah.
Yeah. They call it fanatics. Yeah. Fanatics. Yeah.
Maybe if you were good, you'd have some.
Maybe. I got lovers. That's all I got. I'm excited about this guest today.
Well, not really a guest. A friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
Friend of the podcast. We don't do guests. We have friends of the podcast. People we like. People we want to talk to.
Yeah.
And I figure we need to get back to our roots because now I love Dave Parker and that was great and flashback to my childhood with Dave Parker. But I love talking radio. The business of radio.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm a radio nerd, and I love the great people that are on radio that do such a great job and having some of them on and people we know. And we are excited because not only do we get to talk to a colleague at Fox Sports Radio on the weekends, but also a guy I've known since I was a kid. I started in radio when I was 19 years old, and this guy was one of the big stars at the Mighty 690 when I started. And I didn't intern on his show. I interned on Lee Hacks on Hamilton show. But we're talking about Steve Hartman, the man that has been the loose cannon of Southern California and syndicated radio for forever, pretty much, right? Going back to the late 80s, early 90s. He's been on radio, and so we're gonna catch up with Steve Hartman, which I'm excited about because I have a lot of stories with Steve, and Steve's been on television and radio and done it, had a Hall of Fame career. He's actually in maybe we'll bring this up, maybe not, but he's in the Southern California Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. And It's funny because Arnie Spanier, he's trying to get into that Hall of Fame. He's very upset that he's not in it. We've had Arnie on the podcast, and I'm not in it either, but Steve's in it. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
We got a verified, bona fide Hall of Famer here.
Yeah.
He's joining us right now.
He's a beast. So I worked as an intern for him back in the day, back when I was at San Diego State. I think it was like 2004, 2005. And I was one of those loggers. I don't know if you did this back in the day, Ben, but I had a log tape. And this is when they did tape-to-tape editing. So whenever I was given a cassette tape or a VHS tape, I'd have to log the time from when, like, let's just say it's Major League Baseball. I'd have to log the time from when a pitch was thrown to when the pitch or the play was over with. So I had logged time so when they did their television spots that there'd be enough time in there for when they had obviously sound on tape. So I was logging all the B-roll for them. So I knew Steve only from afar because everyone said he was pretty much like the class nerd. He was just like in and out, perfectly parted hair. It was loud. He was just that guy. And pretty surreal to all of a sudden fast forward the clock a decade and a half later and I get to be working with him.
That's pretty cool. And Steve is authentic. You know, some of these guys in radio, and you know, I'm pretty quiet off the radio, Gascon. Yeah. I'm pretty reserved. But Steve's 24/7. He's nonstop. It's unbelievable.
And he doesn't look like it. Yeah, that's crazy.
I know. He works every day, but it's just his personality. Like I try to kind of wind down, but he does not. He does not believe in winding down. Well, enough of that. Let's welcome in the man, the myth, the legend. FSR colleague. He's doing Morning Drive in San Diego, but he is the ultimate loose cannon, a man who has seen and done everything, Steve Hartman. So, Steve, it's great to have you on. We've been trying to get you on the podcast. Actually, Gascon hasn't been trying to get anyone on the podcast, but let me begin with this. Now, you've had many great accomplishments. You've covered Super Bowls, All-Star games. You've interviewed the biggest names in sports. So where does this appearance on the Fifth Hour podcast rank in your hierarchy of career accomplishments?
Well, this doesn't take a lot of thought, Ben, because it is absolutely at the top. And let me say for the record, let me make this perfectly clear. For the record, and I say this in 100% honesty, and I've said this from the first time I've heard Ben Maller on the radio. Ben Maller is the best at what he does. Now, you can qualify that in any way you want, but I believe that Ben Maller is the best at what he does, and I just want to state that for the record. So twist it any way you want. You do what you do better than anyone else does it. Period,
wow.
Exclamation point.
Wow. Now, that's a ringing endorsement. As you know, Steve, I started at the station you started. I was just a lowly intern at Extra Sports 690, the mighty 690, and I interned for Hacksaw. We've had Hacksaw on the podcast a couple of times, but I remember I'd get there early because I was a radio nerd, Steve, and I would see you and Chet Forte doing your thing there, doing the show, and I love the vibe and that whole thing, and obviously I've gotten into the business all these years and been in it and whatnot. But what was it like? I want to know, before I got there, I saw what it was like when I got there a few years after the station had launched, but what was it like when you guys first went on the air and launched that thing?
Oh, my. All right, so, Ben, I mean, I don't want to go a whole history lesson, but we have time. It's a podcast. So, as you know, back in the 80s, I was working as the PR guy for the LA Raiders. I had no interest in being a broadcaster, never thought about being a broadcaster. You know, I was working as a PR guy, and I got frustrated because Al Davis wouldn't give me a raise to $30,000 a year. This is literally why I quit the Raiders, is I wrote a letter to Mr. Davis saying, you're paying me $24,300, I'm doing a crap load of work, pay me to $30,000. He said, $30,000? We are 5-10 this year. You want me to give you a raise? That was enough. Done. Finished. I took a non-sports job for 4 months. I had seen the movie Wall Street one too many times, and I was convinced I was working for Gordon Gekko and I was Bud Fox. 4 months later, I quit that job. So I was back at ground zero. And as you know, Ben, my radio career actually started at this little K-Fox radio with my mentor, Bud Ferrillo. Bud Ferrillo, my whole career is due to a man named Bud Ferrillo.
The Steamer.
Longtime newspaper, radio guy in Los Angeles. He took me under his wing when I was 20 years old. He said, you're freaking kid. I don't know how you retain so much crap in your head that I could use you. So I was working at this little radio station, K-Fox, when Bud got contacted by a man named John Lynch. And it was amazing to me because this John Lynch was in San Diego. He had the station 690. It was the flagship of the Chargers. And they had an afternoon radio guy named Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. And I'd never heard of Hacksaw. You know, Ben, how it is.
Yeah.
If you don't understand this from the Southern California standpoint, there are three distinct markets. There's L.A., there's Orange County, and there's San Diego. The relevance of San Diego sports in L.A. is no different than Buffalo. There is no relevance of San Diego sports in Los Angeles. So I had never heard of this Hacksaw guy. So Bud calls me and he says, look, listen to this hack. You can hear the signal up in L.A. So I'm listening. The first time I hear Hacksaw, I call back Bud. He goes, what'd you think? I said, I literally counted 12 things this guy made up, completely made up. Like he's stating things on the air that are not true. I mean, absolutely not true. So we went down to do an audition show on the weekend, and you can you can figure this one out, Ben. So we drive down to San Diego. This is old Pacific Highway Studios.
Yeah.
And we do a Saturday audition show, and Bud had lined up all these guests, and I was going to do, like, updates. But it's the Bud Furlough show, right?
Yeah.
And none of the guests showed up. It was a catastrophe. I mean, it was the worst radio show ever. I wish I had a tape of this show. It was an absolute bomb. So we're driving back to L.A. I go, well, there goes that opportunity in San Diego. But they stayed in touch. And the next thing you know, I get called down to San Diego. They tell me, look, we don't want Bud. We want you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's the Bud Furlough show. Well, we got this young guy, Brad Sesmat, and we're going to put you with him. And I'm like, really? So they hired me. And then 7 months later, Brad was out, and Chet Forty shows up. How much interaction did you have, Ben, with Chet? Did you have much?
I only met him a few times. He's very nice. Little guy, right? Little guy, I remember. And, I talked to him a bit in the newsroom with the high-speed sports wire and the sports ticker
right.
And all that. But, I didn't talk to him too much. There was only a few times I talked to him back in those days. But he was great. You and Chet were wonderful. He had all the
certain. Well,
he was the Monday night football guy.
Yeah, I'm like this novice, right? 7 months on the radio, I'm still trying to figure out if this is anything I have any interest in doing. And they stick me with, you know, Chet Forty, and I'm thinking, didn't we interview him talking about how he was facing a prison sentence for federal tax evasion? Like, he was going to go to prison, and now we're going to hire this guy to be my partner. And I remember John Lynch, the guy that ran our station, looked at me and he goes, you better make this work. And I'm like, so my whole career, as short as it was at that point, is riding on me trying to figure out how to do a radio show with a guy that had even less radio experience than I had. So we were really two guys. And Ben, you know, back in those days, like, sports talk radio was pretty mild. Wasn't too much noise going on.
Yeah.
But early on, Chet and I just started screaming at each other. Like, he wasn't ready for a young guy to challenge anything he had to say. I was like, if you say one more stupid thing, I swear to God, I'm going to knock you into tomorrow. I mean, we got so heated on the air. All I kept thinking is, my radio career is going to end before it even begins. And then there was an article in the Union Tribune down in San Diego that did this glowing review of our radio show. I'm reading this thing. Is this guy listening to what I'm listening to? And from that point on, and of course, we got the name of Loose Cannons from Hacksaw, who was getting inundated with phone calls on his show, which came on after ours, of people complaining about our show, that these guys are off their charts, they're whipping the Chargers and everything else. And he called us a couple of loose cannons. And you know how a nickname works. And, like, you don't give yourself a nickname.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Somebody called the Saxon and said this. And the next caller said, hey, Loose Cannons. And that's how it started. It just went like wildfire from that point on. So those 5 years with Chet, it's hard to believe now. It's going to be 25 years since he passed away, coming up here on May 18th. 18th, Ben, is the 25th anniversary of Chet passing away, if you can believe that.
I can't believe it's been that long, and you guys did so well, and then you've kept the Loose Cannons brand going all these years. How many different Loose Cannons? I know you did the show after Chet passed away, you changed it up, and then you went to L.A. and you did the show with Vic the Brick and Michael Thompson and Pat O'Brien, and how many different incarnations have there been of the Loose Cannons?
Well, Ben, let's be, I don't know if I have any real standing in the history of sports talk radio, but I can safely say that no one has hosted a show with more co-hosts than I have in sports radio history. I mean, yeah. I've done shows with you. Who haven't I done a show with in my career? I guarantee you I hold that record without a doubt. But the true Loose Cannons after Chet Forty was Philly Billy Wendell. Then I came up to Los Angeles with Michael Thompson and Vic the Brick. And then they got rid of it when I did the national show with Chris Myers. It was Myers and Hartman. I hated that. We went back to the Loose Cannons when we brought in Pat O'Brien. And then after I went down to San Diego, they brought the Loose Cannon brand back. But you're not going to believe this. You ready for this, Ben?
I
get moved in December. The morning show in San Diego, the Fox affiliate, got taken out by budget cuts. So sort of like when the pandemic began, everyone's sort of like, We're going to flatten the curve for a couple of weeks. So my boss in San Diego said, can you just temporarily fill in on the morning show? I'm still on the morning show, and my partners, Rich Hornberger and John Schaefer, who did the afternoon, they're still called the Loose Cannons.
What?
So the Loose Cannon. So right now, and people are like, where's Hartman? How can you have a show called the Loose Cannons without Hartman? But that's where it is right now. The afternoon show on Extra 1360 in San Diego is called the Loose Cannons with Rich Orberger and John Schaefer. And I'm doing the morning show.
Oh, wait. So Steve, I went on the podcast. I went through the 1360 page, and I was like, all right, I want to see what's going on here and do my due diligence. And I saw the Loose Cannons name, and I didn't see your picture. And I thought, well, maybe you just didn't want your picture used or something. I didn't realize that you weren't even part of that show right now. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And people are confused, and there are people like, have you left the station? I go, no, I'm on the mornings. You know how this works.
Yeah, you got your
audience, Ben. People have a certain show, whether it's the mornings, middays, afternoons, late night, whatever, that they're locked into. They don't necessarily know the entire lineup of the station. They just know the shows that they listen to. And so there are people like, you know, my Twitter account, Facebook, Twitter, have you left the station? I go, no, I'm on the mornings. I'm doing this morning show now from 6 to 9. So.
Well, it is one of the great revelations, though, Stephen. I learned that over the years being in radio, that you know you think you're the most important person to somebody's life.
Yeah.
But really, it's just the time you're on, they happen to be listening. And if you're not there, they might like you, but they're not going to really – most people aren't going to go out of their way. You know, it's like if you're there, it's convenient, they'll listen. If not, sorry, wonder what happened, but I'll move on. Crazy.
Today, literally today on our text line, doing the morning show. I've been doing radio for 32 years now, nonstop, 32 years, much of this time 7 days a week, right? And somebody texted me and goes, I've never heard this Steve Hartman guy, but I really like what he has to say. So here, 32 years, and somebody today texted in, listening to the morning show, saying, I've never heard this Steve Hartman guy before, but I really like what he has to say.
All right, I think he's got a chance to make it. I think Steve Hartman can have a long career and a Hall of Fame career in radio. That's what I think. Yes,
I guess. I just think it's great. You always think like everyone's followed your entire career religiously. And, you know, I've had people, Michael Thompson, believe it or not, came on our show. I have Michael every once in a while. And he was upset that we were calling the show Loose Cannons. He goes, we were the original Loose Cannons. And I'm like, actually, you weren't, Michael. Chet 40 was the original Loose Cannon. He got hammered on social media. Know your Loose Cannon history.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Now, guys, I know a little something of something, but I'm going to make an educated guess here. And I'm going to say that guy that made that compliment to Steve was not Don Martin. Don Martin.
My man, that's the third rail, my man.
We have to go third rail. So, Steve, like, it's not been all like smooth sailing, you know, sunshine and rainbows. You and Don Martin have had it, you guys have gone back and forth in years, right?
Well, let's talk about the whole Don Martin Association. So here's what happened, guys. So we were sailing along at 690 quite nicely, and they launched 1150. Ben, you're obviously very familiar with 1150.
That's right. That was my
But back in 1997, in 1997, they launched
March 1150, which was
going to be the L.A. counterpart to 690. Hmm. And this is when J-Core had acquired J-Core eventually gets swallowed up by Clear Channel. Yeah. So the idea was they had a guy named Jack Evans. And Jack Evans was running the show, and he was saying that 690 would be San Diego and 1150 was going to be L.A. And I remember asking, well, why would they stop listening to 690 in L.A.? Because we had a huge L.A. Orange County audience. He goes, they will. Well, guess what? They didn't. So we get to 2002, and it's right around the time of the World Series when the Angels beat the Giants. I'll never forget this. So I had gotten a phone call a couple of months earlier from this Robin Bertolucci, and she was running KFI, but she was sort of overseeing the 1150 operation. There seemed to be transition, you know, like Dave Smith had been let go, and, you know, some of the guys you all know from those 1150 days. So we were assuming as soon as the season was over, because their contract with the Dodgers was running out, that that would be the end of 1150, and that 690 would just hold as we had been before 1150. But I get this phone call from this Robin Bertolucci, and she says, yeah, could you fill in on the afternoon show on 1150 this week? And I'm like, what? So we had our boss, Bill Pugh, who happens to be the brother of Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick's real name is Dan Pugh, by the way, as you guys know. So anyway, I go to Bill Pugh, our programming guy at 690. I get the weirdest phone call from this Robin Bertolucci, and she wants me to do the afternoon show. This will be, and I don't want to overstate my importance, but it was sort of like the Clippers calling the Lakers saying, can we borrow Kobe for a game? You know, like, you know, just could he work for us? And his reaction was sort of like, well, what do you think? I'm like, what do you mean, what I think? If you want the midday show here, you want me to do the afternoon show on that other station? Well, it never happened because they got into the World Series and everything else. And then the day that we'll all remember was the day that it was Halloween 2002. Billy Wendell and I had just finished doing our midday show. And we finished the show, and we get called into Bill Pugh's office. And he tells us that day, 690's dead, as we know it. We're going to merge 690 and 1150 to create a super station. And right now, you guys are not a part of it. And I'm like, okay, so what are we doing here? When are we going to find out whether we're a part of it? He wanted to bring in a show he had created down in San Diego, Scott and BR, Scott Kaplan, Billy Ray Smith. But when they notified the L.A. people, they're like, who the hell is Scott and BR? We want Hartman. We want the loose cannons. So I got the call, and then Philly Billy blindsides me because I fought hard to keep him on the show. He quits because John Lynch, our old boss at 690, was starting a new station, 1090, that was going to be based in San Diego. So the next phone call I get is from a guy who's just been hired to run the new superstation, Don Martin. Don Martin. So I've never met Don Martin. I find out that he's engaged to Robin Bertolucci, and we're going to meet. And I'll put this way with Don. It was a challenge, no question. And obviously Don has had a highly successful career in radio management. But we did butt heads. If I didn't like things that were happening, I told him. And he didn't always react all that well to that. So that's just the way I've been throughout my career. I mean, I lived to my loose cannon moniker. And we had episodes, many episodes over the years. We had good times. We had bad times. But the bottom line is this is going to happen in any industry, guys. I mean, I could give you one specific story. It's not exactly a secret story. It was a very public story where Don and I had it out at a Dodger game, and it pretty much cemented our situation. But I'll also tell you this, Don Martin, when he got back in a position of power running the network for Fox Sports Radio, had no hesitance in bringing me back to do the weekend. So The last time I saw Don was at the Southern California Sports Broadcasters Luncheon. They were honoring Vic before the pandemic, and we were cordial. So everything is good as far as I'm concerned. And you know, Ben, as well as even Mr. Dave Gaskin, if you're in this business, if you want to survive in this business, you can't be making enemies. You can't be burning bridges. If you have disagreements, move on and just get back to the business of doing good radio.
No, but I got to tell you, Steve, that's one of the great accomplishments. I remember that night, and everyone was my phone was blown up. Did you hear what happened in the luxury box at Dodger Stadium? I was, no, I didn't hear what happened. And everyone had a different version. You know, it's like that phone game where you pass the message along. And
all right, well, I'll give you very quick what happened. So here's what happened. It was a Dodger-Yankee game, okay? So the Yankees were at Dodger Stadium. So you know it's a massive crowd. out at Dodger Stadium. I was actually at the Dodger game doing television work. So I was on the field doing a live shot, and I run into Dave Weiss, the promotions director, and Brian Blackmore, you know, been working for the station. So I'm doing the national radio show at this point, and I don't have a whole lot of time in Burbank. Don had just been let go as running the Fox Sports Radio Network the week before, and I hadn't spoken to him since. So I asked Weiss, not knowing if Don was going to be at the game, whether they had the suite there. And we said, oh, yeah, go down and get some food. So I walk into the suite, and as I'm in the suite, I see Don Martin. But he's got his back turned to me. He's getting some food. So I walk up to him, and I'm anxious to find out what happened, right? So I walk up to Don, and he turns around, and I said, what's up, B-Mar? And he looks at me and goes, if I were you, I would turn around and walk out of here right now. And I'm looking at him like, you know, we're face to face. I go, why would I do that? He goes, I know. And basically what happened was this. He was blaming Pat O'Brien for his being ousted by the network. Obviously, I had nothing to do with it. I wielded no power at all. Zero. All I know is that the bosses at Clear Channel at the time had decided to flip our show and make it really the Pat O'Brien show. Again, something I had no control over, and neither did Don Martin. So, but Don was angry, and he took it out on me. And it was in front of a lot of people. And so, you know, again, I can get past all this stuff. It really doesn't faze me. But in reality, it was pretty much the end for me as far as working Monday through Friday at the network. And I feel fortunate to have continued my career after. And it was just a very unfortunate situation.
Steve, does this rival in comparison to when you gaslit a colleague of ours a few years ago prior to the NFL draft? It was the draft that saw Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, amongst many others, Josh Allen as well. And you decided to poke and prod and spearhead a knife into the side of Brady Papinga, thus catapulting him into my studio ready for a fist fight.
Well, first of all, David, I have nothing to do with that. That was you, man. let me tell you, Gascon is unbelievable about this stuff. You talk about revisionist history. I had nothing to do with that. Now, yes, am I an antagonist? Ben's an antagonist. That's what we do. If we see a spark, we put the blowtorch on it. And yep. The thing was, I did get Brady Papinga, former NFL linebacker, a big man. Yeah. Really agitated with Gascon, Ben. You couldn't believe it. He literally walks out of the studio, right through the control studio, turns the corner into the update studio. I didn't get to see the expression on his face from where I was sitting. So, Davey, you tell me.
Yeah, it was great. He was standing over me.
Brady Papinga is one of like the mellow. When I've been around him, he's been mellow and, you know, all that. And what did you do?
Well, he goes from 0 to 60 in the blink of an eye if something just goes awry.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield. And I said, Josh Rosen has been the better quarterback, you know, going through high school to college. It's not his fault that he's had an offensive line that's just been decimated. He's got no coaching staff. And, you know, Baker Mayfield's had all these the riches given to him at Oklahoma. And then I had seen Josh Rosen in high school and in college, and I knew Brady didn't monitor him like growing up. So he thought like Rosen was aloof and all these other things. And I pretty much said, like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And then we come back from break, and he tries to start undressing me, saying, you don't know what defenses are, you don't know how to read coverage, and he starts asking me all these things, and I start answering on the air, But Steve continues to like poke at him on air, and then right after that, he came into the studio on break, and he got in my face, and I got right up at him too, and yeah, it was one.
Well, and by the way, when he got back in studio, I totally backed him up. You know that I wasn't going to go. You were gone. You were absent to me at that point, Gascon. You were done, David. At that point, I was all Papinga.
Steve.
Taking his side against you, 100%.
Now, the one thing that we'll get behind you on is, despite the fact that you're a couple years older than both Ben and myself, you look like a 40-year-old man with perfect hair.
You look better than I do. I know that, Steve. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. And you have not, you've got a little, I was telling a friend, I was watching on TV, and I said, he's kind of become like a young Jim Hill. You know how Jim Hill hasn't aged? At all.
Right.
It looks exactly the same.
Well, I worked with Jim Hill side by side for 12 years, so that's the whole point. In other words, I learned from Jim Hill how to basically freeze yourself in time what you do. I was looking the other day at a show that we did, Jim and I, about 15 years ago. Uh-huh. And yeah, I have to admit, both of us pretty much look exactly the same.
No, it's amazing for those listening that aren't in LA. Jim Hill's been on TV since I was a kid, and he looks exactly the same as when I was like 8 years old watching him on TV. And Steve, as you said, you look the same. So he let you in on the cheat code. He let you in on how to not age, stop aging.
Well, the one thing Jimmy used to always say to me all the time was, "Keep fooling him. Keep fooling him." I will say this about Jim Hill and just his hair, his fro. Yeah. So I sat next to this man every weekend for 12 years in a row. 12 years in a row. And let's see, Jim now is 70. I want to say he's at least 73 years old. But in the years that I sat next to him, I never saw a single gray hair. Not one. So a little touch up, that's sort of passable, but it was amazing to me. I kept thinking there's got to be one, right? I can see his whole hair, everything, never once.
Now, Steve, did you?
Never once with Jim Hill.
Speaking of Jim Hill, did you ever enjoy the experience that Jim Hill had at night on those party buses?
So when I started working with Jim, this was in the beginning. So I started working at Channel 2 in 1998. And I'm a radio guy. I mean, I've been doing LA TV now for, it's going to be 23 years in June that I've been doing LA TV between CBS KCAL and KTLA where I am now. But I've never looked at myself as a TV guy. I'm a radio guy who happens to do a weekend gig on TV. It's stealing money, I can promise you that. Anyway, so Jim Hill immediately and I, we hit it off. Jim doesn't get buddy-buddy with a lot of people, right? Everyone knows Jim Hill, but he doesn't know everybody. If you actually hear him say your name, that's a miracle. Like, even for me, it took probably a few months working on it every week before he actually could say Steve. Like, I mean, he's not great with names. So as soon as we hit it off, though, we felt like, hey, we're pretty good together here. And in those days, Jim had the Fun Bus. And the Fun Bus was exactly as advertised. It was one of those custom buses like celebrities have. You got to have some pretty serious coin to get one of those. And he would bring, let's say, adult entertainment onto the bus with us. So it'd be like me and a friend of his and some girls, and it was a Fun Bus. So we did this everywhere. I went to have fun times in a lot of different places at Jim Hill, and he's a really fun guy and knows how to entertain himself. So, yes, we had quite a few excursions on the Fun Bus, legendary stories to say the least.
Wow. It's like the Jerry Jones party bus, the Jim Hill Fun Bus. I remember, Steve, I have a great Jim Hill story. I don't know if I've told this one before, but we were doing a remote at the 1150 when I was doing 1150 from Bob's Classy Lady out in the Valley, a strip club, which they put a sports bar behind the strip club, and they wanted us to get people to go to the sports bar. It did not work out very well. But we go into, after the show, we go into Bob's Classy Lady. We were done with our shift and we're, enjoying it there. And it was so funny because the manager had come over and given uh, some some gift cards out. And I guess the legend, you know, to us, because we were, you know, we were the radio guys, but I guess the legend is, and I don't think this is true, because I think that was too far from where Jim lived, but the legend I heard was that they gave him like a gold card. He was at the Hollywood Tropicana, which used to be right across from where CBS was. I remember back in the day. Not that I went there, Steve, unless I might have gone there a few times, but...
I'll put it this way. Now, again, this is no secret about Jim. And so, yeah, he likes adult entertainment. Who doesn't? So, exactly. But one night we were out on the fun bus, and we made a stop to a strip place that I'd never seen before. I still to this day do not know if this place exists, like it was a private club. We walk in, and everything was really upscale, like not your typical place. And Jim was just classic. Like everybody knows Jim Hill. Who doesn't know Jim Hill in Los Angeles? So basically, he told them, unbeknownst to me, just take care of my boy Hartman over here. And to say that they did, they had a menu. Like you order what kind of girl you want to be in the company of. You know, what kind of physical features do you find most appealing? And wow. So I made my order, and a girl came up to me that was so beyond. It's like literally ordering a hamburger and you get prime rib. Like it was like, whoa, wee, wah, woo, wah, yeah, yeah. And Jim took care of everything. And I just remember I was up there, you know, multiple dances, the whole thing. All of a sudden I hear, hey, Hartman, we got to get going here. And of course I was in a fog. I didn't know where I was at that point. But yeah, to be in the company of Jim Hill is rarefied air. And, you know, I've been insanely fortunate. I seem like accident after accident after accident in my career to be in the company of, like, really big-time people and just sort of being dragged along to all their fun times. And I've never complained about it. It's always good to me. Always worked.
Yeah. I know you got to go, Steve, in a couple of minutes, but I just wanted to get a good Al Davis story. I've heard you tell the tale about Irwindale, and this is one of my favorite stories, where the Raiders were for like 2 days going to move to Irwindale when they were the LA Raiders. What went on? Give me that story. It's one of the greats. When Al Davis went out, they had a news conference, and what went on with that episode?
Well, here's what happened to Irwindale. So if you don't know Raider history, when the Raiders moved to Los Angeles, all kinds of promises were made by the Coliseum Commission that they were going to build luxury suites. We even had a prototype luxury suite at our headquarters in El Segundo. And then the Coliseum Commission came under new leadership, and they ditched the whole idea of luxury boxes. They wanted to go with a multi-level parking lot. I know you guys have been with Coliseum. Do you see any multi-level parking lots? That never obviously happened either. So all of a sudden, this guy named Xavier Hermosillo, representing the city of Irwindale, had a presentation of the idea that they would build a stadium in Irwindale for the Raiders. Well, Al Davis's initial reaction was, no chance. Okay, no, we're not. He didn't even know what none of us knew where Irwindale was. They're like, it's north, okay? So what ultimately happened here is that Hermosillo came back and said, I'll tell you what, we'll give you $10 million non-refundable if you just consider our offer.
Wow.
by the way, you know what happened with that $10 million? That's how we signed Bo Jackson. That's wow. Where the money came for the Raiders to entice Bo Jackson to create a double life as a Major League Baseball player and as an NFL player. That money was partly used for that, upgrades at our station. So, yes, we had a press conference out in Irwindale to announce the Raiders were proudly going to be making Irwindale our new home, when the bottom line was he had no intention of ever doing this, ever. That hole is still there where the foundation of that stadium. You can drive to Irwindale. It's never been filled in. It is absolutely there.
I have an update. Now, I go by there, Steve. They actually did just recently fill it in, finally.
Because I haven't been up in Irwindale years. Every time I used to drive up there, it was still a big hole.
No. This was in the last, during 2020 with the whole COVID thing. I think it was last year. I go by there on my way home, and they filled it in finally. But yeah, every time I drove by there, I thought of Al Davis. I remember the news conference when somebody showed up with an Irwindale Raiders jacket. I still remember, like a silver Irwindale Raiders jacket. Listen, Steve, we got to have you on again.
It was never going to happen, but once they handed him $10 million, he spent it immediately.
Of course.
I left there the following year in 1988, and I remember telling him, I actually did a sit-down with Mr. Davis, and I said, look, I was like the only L.A. guy there. All these guys are people that came down from Oakland originally. And I told him flat out, I said, you're never going to survive in L.A. if you don't start stepping up your game. It's not just about winning games. What do you do when you lose games? And all of a sudden, that's what was happening. We had lost about 20,000 fans per game after they had won that Super Bowl in L.A. because they were losing. Nobody in L.A. is going to support a loser, and unfortunately, the Raiders found out the hard way.
All right. Steve, we love you, man. Thank you. We got to have you on again. You're wonderful. You're great.
I have a million stories. I'm just getting started. But, Ben, it's always great. Mr. Gascon, love you guys. Ben, keep up. I get to listen to you Sunday night. I leave Hollywood at midnight. It takes me 2 hours to get back to San Diego. I listen to you every second. So shout out to you. That's Sunday night into Monday morning. I laugh my ass off constantly listening to your show. Best ever.
Love you. All right. The legend. The great Steve Harbin. Thank you, Steve.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.